Welcome to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. We're here to bring the best of college recruiting. Every week, we'll bring new guests with knowledge, stories, and tools to take you a step closer on playing at the next level.
Next level.
Let's do this. This is the iSports Recruiting Podcast. And here's your host, Ronnie Romero.
Welcome to today's episode to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. And at the same time, if you think that we bring you valuable information for those student athletes and families, please leave us a review at any platform you use, iTunes, Spotify. It will take you 30 seconds. This will help tremendously. If you want to know more about college recruiting and golf in general, you better listen to this episode. In our conversation today, we talked to former head coach out of Notre Dame University, Susan Holt. Coach Susan has guided student athletes to the highest level of competition in women's golf. She has over 32 years of experience at the NCAA D1 level. We will get to know more about her style of recruiting, get to know more about Notre Dame, and golf in general. I'd like to take this moment to invite you to download the app iSports Recruiting app on Apple Store and Google Play. Only for $24.99, you will get the opportunity to build an online profile to present college coaches, which an athlete dashboard, search engine information, schools requirements, unlimited high videos, and most importantly, unlimited emails to college coaches. Now, let's get going and listen to head coach Susan Holt. Coach, thank you so very much for accepting my invitation. It's a pleasure meeting you and for taking this time. It's extremely valuable for us, for the student athletes, for the parents that I'm listening to this podcast, this episode. Everybody who is involved in golf should pay attention with this, because the experience that you have at the collegiate level is massive. I start reading about your background and I congratulate you for everything that you have done in the past, to be honest. It's amazing. Coach Susan Holt, from former head coach of Notre Dame. And also, you were a coach, if you're not mistaken, you coach in University of South Florida for 93 to 2006. Is that correct, coach?
Yes, it is.
I want to go over, because you were in Notre Dame for 16 years. You took Notre Dame for the first time in history of the institution to the first NCAA championship, 4 conference championships, 6-time conference coach of the year, 13 titles and 12 run-up finishes, 10 NCAA regular appearances, and you coach the first lady to go to the LPGA tournament from Notre Dame. Before anything, I always like to start with getting to know you personally, how everything started, and then we're going to touch bases on your career, and we're going to touch bases on recruiting, and what can we provide to the student athletes and parents that are listening to this, how to get the best out of college recruiting. Coach?
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And tell me how everything started with you and golf.
Yeah. So my dad was an avid golfer growing up, and my older brother played. My younger sister played, and I played, and we joined a country club. It was more like a club in the country is what we called it. But it had your typical swimming pool, tennis courts, driving range, golf course. And, I tried all three, but I really gravitated to the golf. And when I was like 9 years old, I got involved in the junior golf program, and the pro reached out to my parents and said that, he thought I had some talent, and he really wanted to work with me. And, kind of the rest is history. He put a lot of time and effort into me, and actually showed up at my house with a full set of clubs, a bag, and a pair of shoes one night. which was pretty cool. Nice. 9 years old. So I was hooked at that point, and I really committed myself to just trying to get better. Played in a lot of junior tournaments growing up, and allowed me the opportunity to be recruited by Ohio State. And, yeah, I grew up in Ohio. My father went to Ohio State. So I had been brainwashed at a very early age to be a Buckeye.
And, a Buckeye it is.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a great place for me. Thoroughly enjoyed my time there. I still go back as often as I can. And, you know, from there, I kind of decided I wanted to stay in golf. I wasn't good enough to play professionally. Mm-hmm. I knew that, you know, my dad, I think, you know, he really wanted me to try and certainly had the opportunity to do that. But I loved the game, but I just didn't want to stay in golf that way. So I became a club pro for a couple of years. And then I got a call from the coach at the Purdue University. Mm-hmm. And he had recruited me and knew that I wanted to get into coaching. And he reached out to me. I was 23 years old. Oh. 2 years out of college, year and a half, really. And he wanted me to apply for the job and send him my resume. And I did. And I know he really went to bat for me and supported me. And I ended up getting that job. Yeah, with no experience.
As an assistant coach right there.
Yeah, no, I was a head coach.
The head coach.
Wow. Yeah, at the age of 23. At that particular year, I was the youngest head coach in the Big Ten.
In the Big Ten. And, wow. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, here I am. I had no coaching experience. Certainly learned on the fly. And I only knew what I knew. You know, from my time as a student athlete. So it was a steep learning curve. And I stayed at Purdue for 3 years. And then from there, I went to the University of South Florida, where I was for 13 years and then went on to Notre Dame, which is where I just retired from. And I was there for 16 years.
Now, let me ask you something. Back in the day when you were, you know, in the teenage and you did a bunch of tournaments and you travel, that was the best way for you to get noticed by the college coaches in order for you to get recruited, or how you did your recruiting on those days?
Right. I mean, really, golf certainly wasn't as big as it is now. Mm-hmm. Back when I was in high school, I actually played on the boys' team.
And the boys team. Wow, interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, we
so
didn't.
You were
have
the
girls.
Only the only female, the only girl.
I was the only female in our whole conference of 10 schools. Yeah. Wow. So so I played high school golf, but I played on the boys team, and I actually played the back tees. So for me, the transition to college golf was actually pretty easy because the course got shorter.
Okay.
Because I went from playing like blue tees to playing kind of like the white tees.
To the white tees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had a really good short game because I played the blue tees and I didn't hit it as far as the guys. So my short game was pretty good, which I needed it to be. But you know, there wasn't the AJGA back then. You know, which is the big national junior tour. They have 5 or 6 tournaments a week now in the summer. Mm-mm. So
how many? Can you repeat that? How many?
I think that AJGA will host 5 to 6 tournaments a week in the summer from coast to coast.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, they go, you know, all across the country. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. I mean, it's an awesome tour. And I mean, the way it's set up, mm-hmm. you may not have to travel that far mm-hmm. to actually participate mm-hmm. in the tournament. Back when I played, I had to travel quite a bit if I wanted, you know, to get noticed, because there just weren't a lot of tournaments to play in.
So the different, between back in the day to now is massive, because we know, of course, you know, we have social media, we have all these tournaments. Is it, I think youth sports, correct me if I'm wrong right here, but I think youth sports become a really massive business for the industry of sports, right?
Absolutely.
There is so much between, you know, being, and I told you, because, you know, my son played baseball and played soccer. And it's extremely expensive. I mean, it's like they taking it like too personal, you know, to the kids, and then it's two, you know, three, four times a week in practice, and it's you know, weekends you have tournaments and tournaments, and it is four games, three games, five games. What can we do, you know, from there? And now, if you have the power to have a, you know, say, or to know, what can we do different between, you know, between, because I think it's too much for the kids, you know, mentally. It's, right. I don't know, in golf, is it like that? If you have to be like, you know, three, four times, six times a week out in the field. So the training, the practices, the you know, the games, the homeworks, the classes, it's a lot of stress on the kids right there. So tell me, coach, what do you think about that? And excuse me, I went in a different path right now, but it just came through my mind right now.
No, I mean, it is a lot. I have two grown children, and they both participated on travel teams. My son did travel baseball, and my daughter did travel softball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been there. I've lived that, and it is a lot. I really think it comes down to just, for me, I didn't really care what tournaments young kids played in. I just wanted them to play and to compete. You know, I don't think you have to go play in the AJGA stuff every week. I mean, if all you can handle, because maybe there's multiple children in your family, your parents can't be everywhere at once, you know, and it takes a village. I know, you know, for my position, you know, I was off recruiting, and I had other parents taking my kids to these tournaments to play baseball and softball. So, you know, if you have the support system, that's one thing, but, you know, if you don't, I know, you know, every state right now has, you know, junior golf associations. They have junior tournaments throughout the state. Most cities will have junior events. So for me, it's just getting out there and competing. Because I mean, if you're shooting the scores, you're shooting the scores. It doesn't matter where you're doing it. So right. I mean, I had players on my teams from all kinds of different, you know, economic backgrounds, and I think, like I said, it just comes down to, you know, what you're able to do as a family and make the best of it. But it is a lot. It's a lot of pressure, and it gets to be very expensive. There's no question.
It becomes, like I say, you know, it's a massive business, and, you know, for many parents, sometimes it's tough, you know, sometimes it's tough for them to absorb all of that, you know, at once. Yeah. And, you know, when it comes, because you mentioned something important, you were recruiting when your kids were playing, so that's probably difficult on your end. But nowadays, you know, like you say, there is so many tools up there. Why people take it so seriously? Because if you're going to play at the collegiate level, you know, you probably not going to make it to the pros, except those ones, maybe, you know, like, let's separate football because you enter into the draft, or let's, you know, basketball, because baseball, the money maker, you know, sports, right? But the rest of the sports, when you think that by the age of 16, 15, the parents and the kids will know already that they probably going to go to the pros or not, or is that too soon to take that determination in golf?
You know, I think it's different for everybody. I mean, physically people mature at different ages. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's kind of a hard thing to predict. Mm-hmm. I've had some players actually end up being better, you know, after college. They mm-hmm. matured, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally. Mm-hmm. They just kept playing and competing on like the Symetra Tour and the Futures Tour and those types of things. You know, I think everybody's kind of on their own path. Mm-hmm. You know, some people make it, some people don't. I do think there is definitely a shift in college.
Mm-hmm.
I think usually what I've noticed is kind of between that sophomore, junior year.
Okay.
Where kids kind of know.
They evolve differently right there on those 2 years. Got it.
Yeah. I kind of feel like that, you know, after they get a couple of years, because I think a lot of kids, when they get to college, sure, you know, it's in the back of their mind mm-hmm. that they would like to play professionally. Mm-hmm. But then once mm-hmm. they get out and, you know, we're traveling all across the country and playing in all these big events with ranked schools and players. And, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the reality kind of eventually catches up to you. And, you know, once that kind of comes to light there, I think there is a shift a little bit of, okay, I need mm-hmm. to focus more on my studies, you know, get an internship mm-hmm. and go that way. And that, you know, and that's fine. You know, that's
fine. Most definitely. Now, let's talk a little bit about your style of recruiting, you know, mm-hmm. when it comes to recruits. What would be the first thing you would see or you used to see on the athletes before you make the call? Okay, I'm going to offer a scholarship right here.
Right. Well, I think there's certain, I guess, criteria that I would look for in all the players that I would seek out. I think for me, it's just a young lady that had a real passion for the game.
Mm-hmm.
That they just would compete.
Mm.
You know, I think you learn more from a bad round of golf
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
about somebody than a good round of golf. And, you know, I didn't mind if a kid, you know, kids shooting 85 probably thinking, oh, Coach Holt's not going to recruit me now. And, mm-hmm. you know, I have many of those players that ended up playing for me just because of, they continued to compete
mm-hmm.
And they handled themselves well. You know, they were mature. They didn't get upset and they just kept grinding. I mean, golf's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's
hard. Oh, I know? Told you, I'm not a golf, you know, but every time that I try to hit the ball, forget about it.
Yeah. But I, you know, I think the passion piece for me and, you know, you mm-hmm. can see that pretty quick in a kid, you know, are they playing the game because they love it or are they playing it because their parents love it and they want, mm-hmm. you know, there's, you know, you can see that pretty quick. You know, are they coachable?
And, yeah.
You know, I think that's a big one. And that's just, you know, seeking out their instructor and having those conversations with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, golf, you need to be very, disciplined and self-motivated,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Especially at the college level. You know, we have rules on how many hours a week we can practice as a team, and that's 20 hours in a week. That's
20 hours, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then a mandatory one day off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's not a lot of time when you think about it. I mean, I know I practiced a lot more than 20 hours a week when I was growing up.
Mm.
And, you know, so you've got to be able to manage your time
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
put in that extra work. Because if you're just doing what everybody else is doing, you know, you're probably going to be pretty average. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to excel and do well, you got to do more. You just have to.
Excellent.
And,
excellent.
You know, I think mm-hmm. that's a big part of it. And one thing, as I continued to coach, one thing I really looked at more and more was the relationship the student athlete had with their parents.
Mm, interesting. And
what that dynamic was.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. You know, was it supportive? You know, how what was the interaction between the parent and the student athlete mm-hmm. after a good round and or a bad round? And it, for me, you know, I would hang around and just kind of observe.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. You know, like I said, golf is hard, and you know, I want parents that are going to be supportive through the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, just have that positive reinforcement, because I know that that's what they're wanting from me. And I need to have that from them. We all need to be on the same page as far as that goes.
Very, very interesting, because, sometimes the culture, you know, you know, in the family can, you know, make a big impact on the futures for the kids, right? And
absolutely.
But, you know, I think, I don't know, because you coach, you know, girls, females, right? Women, yeah, when you were, you know, at that age. Is it difficult or is it easier when it comes to, or, you know, how the relationship works between, you know, a girl and a guy, or a boy and a girl, between, you know, parents? I mean, you notice a lot of the difference, or I think the girls are a lot easier probably at that age. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think, coach?
Well, I've only coached women.
Uh-huh.
So the only comparison I have there is between my own two children.
Okay. Okay.
And, you know, they're 26 and 24 now, mm-hmm. but, that's a really interesting question. I think the girls are a lot more emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Girls take things a lot more personal. Just my observation. I mean, you know, I've been around collegiate men, you know, for 32 years, because we always shared a building, and mm-hmm. you know, they mm-hmm. were always around. Mm-hmm. I feel like the boys, They're like range rats. They're there all day. they never leave. And it's like, you know, do you ever study? But
that's good.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, man, you know, the boys, they're just always there. So, but yeah, I just feel like the girls, I think, are a lot more emotional.
More emotional.
And I think, they take things more personal. Like when they play bad, I think they internalize that too much.
Mm. Mm.
Or if a guy has a bad day, it's like, you know, I'll get it tomorrow.
I'll get it tomorrow. Got it. You know, that's something that's, you know, nowadays is so named in, you know, you see in social media so much about mental health and, you know, all kind of stuff that's been happening, especially at the beginning of the year, was kind of crazy with softball. And
yep.
I'm pretty sure you heard about all these crazy stories about it. I imagine Notre Dame has the same value of helping, you know, and have probably, you know, coaches and physical people helping these athletes on a daily basis, right? How can we try to come across with a different views, if you want to call it like that, on that end, on, you know, mental health? How can we make it better? You know, because I don't know, when you grow up, I don't know if you heard that a lot in the past too, on mental health.
Yeah.
But I didn't, you know, on my days of playing sports, I never heard about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I never heard about it. I mean, if you struggle, you struggle. You have to figure it out how to come back or how to make it better some way, somehow. But nowadays, it's so, I imagine, because of social media, because of, you know, the world is looking at what you're doing through what you post on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you know, TikTok, whatever social media it is out there. What can we do different, Coach, on that topic?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you, I didn't hear about it either. It was never talked about when I was in school. We had sports specific psychologists at Ohio State, but there wasn't really ever anybody that you would go to talk to about anything other than golf. I know, you know, at Notre Dame, we have sports psychologists within our athletic department, and we have hired a few more mental health psychologists as well. And I think the biggest way to, I don't know if you can really change it, but just there's such a stigma attached to it, I think, over the years. And I think it's just letting you know, student athletes know that it's okay, and talk about it, make these resources available to them, and not, you know, not feel ashamed. You know, I would always approach it as, we have all these resources for you, and, you know, you pick and choose what you want, but they're all here to help you and you know, to navigate things. I mean, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot of stress. You're away from home, you know, trying to balance studying and competing and travel. It's a lot. It is a lot to handle in a 24-hour period, and then, you know, doing that 7 days a week for
7 days a week for 4 years, or 5 years, depending of, you know, all the sports. Exactly. But in this case, would you be able to, like, probably come to the NCAA and try to make a little bit of a changes of those restrictions, and, you know, so many hours, so many, you know, tournaments, so many, you know, rules, or what will be the different, you know, or how can we make a little bit better for the athletes in order for them not to struggle so much on the mental health issue?
Well, I mean, there's been some changes made, just in the last couple of years. It used to be that your mandatory day off could also be your travel day, but it really wasn't a day off, because you could be traveling across the country.
Correct.
And getting to your tournament destination at 1 a.m. and have to get up and play a practice round at 8 a.m. So not much of a day off. So that rule was changed, and you can no longer use your off day as a travel day.
So
like, you know, when you have your travel day now, you might want to try to practice an hour or two before you go to the airport, because you're going to have an actual mandatory full day off.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was a change that was instituted. It's probably been a handful of years ago now. And every university has a group of student athletes that's called SAC. It's Student Athlete Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And every school sponsors this group, and there's usually a representative from every single team on this committee, and your athletic director and other people within administration will have monthly meetings. I believe at Notre Dame, they meet once a month, and they'll talk about NCAA legislation. And then what happens is, you know, like we were in the Notre Dame's in the ACC. So you've got Virginia, Wake Forest, Duke, Clemson, Florida State, Miami, you know, all these schools are having these discussions with their student athletes, and they'll bring forth things that they'd like to see changed. And then as a conference, we'll take those forward to the NCAA. And so that's how change happens. And there have been significant changes, I would say, in the last 10 years. to definitely help and benefit the student welfare more than ever. Yeah. Most definitely.
Because I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I think playing at the collegiate level is something extraordinary. I think having the opportunity to be a student athlete at any school, it could be D1, D2, D3, any whatever school it is. I think being part of that culture or you know, that the foundation that, you know, I keep talking about this, and it's the foundation that the athletes work, you know, year in and year out right there, because they start having relationships, you know, they start having, you know, you can have your marriage or your spouse right there, your partner for business. You can have, you know, you can start doing entrepreneurship right there with friends. I mean, there is so much that you can grow as an individual and having the opportunity to, you know, I love that part. It's one of the things that I probably, you know, miss the opportunity that I say, you know, I would love to have something at the collegiate level is that, you know, that foundation with, you know, within the future. So I think, you know, being a student athlete, they should take it, you know, serious every time that they're, you know, participating on the sports, and the university itself, they do a great job as well. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. So coach, talk to me a little bit about, you know, your years on the sports. I know you have a very tough conference because you have Boston College, Clemson, Duke, Florida State. I mean, you name it. So what is, out of those years, what's the best year that you can say, you know, we dominated this year right here, and I feel extremely confident that you're going to make it to the end and win the championship.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's probably the toughest golf conference in the country.
Probably.
For men and women. We have 12 women's golf programs in the ACC, and 10 to 11 would make it to the regional tournament every year. So, wow. It was very competitive. I mean, during my time in the ACC, because we've been a part of the ACC now, I think it's been like 9 years.
9 years?
Yeah, roughly. Mm-hmm. And the best we ever finished was fifth. You know, I felt pretty good about it. for the ACC.
Yeah, 2013, if you're not mistaken, was when you guys went to the ACC. Yeah, 2013.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But gosh, in the ACC championship, if you're in the top two, you've got a chance to win the national championship. I mean, it's just, you know, Wake Forest and Duke have been, you know, just a few years ago, they were playing for a national championship against each other in the final match. So, it's a great conference. So it was a privilege to be a part of it. So many great coaches and great history. Mm-hmm. In that conference, and it's a good one to be a part of.
It's a good one to be a part of. And when it comes to academics, on the schools, let's go over Notre Dame. How tough or how good you need to be when it comes to academics before I even consider to apply to Notre Dame?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was what we looked at first and foremost when we were recruiting. We had to. The academic criteria definitely trumped the golf. We didn't ever have anyone on our team with less than a 4.0 out of high school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we never had anybody below 28 on the ACT.
On the ACT, okay.
Yeah, I think our team average the 16 years I was there was 31 on the ACT.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent. And SAT.
What about the ACT? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the SAT was around 1260.
Wow.
Notre Dame is is moving toward being test optional.
Okay.
A lot of schools are doing that now ever since COVID, you know, really put kind of a wrench into all that with testing. And so Notre Dame is really looking at, and a lot of schools are, I mean, your higher academic schools, Ivy Leagues.
The Ivy Leagues, yeah.
And then your, you know, high academic schools are really looking at the AP and honors classes. You know, I can't stress enough, if you're a young person that is looking to go high academic, you've really got to push yourself as soon as you can. You know, some high schools don't offer AP and honors classes until like junior year. As soon as you can start taking them, start doing it. At Notre Dame, it was like a minimum of 6, usually AP or honors classes. And I'll tell you, there's a huge benefit to it because it really makes your transition in the college a lot easier. I don't want to say easier, but more seamless because you're used to handling that workload.
Definitely.
You know, but then, you know, the tough part is you're traveling now
Because how many hours? Well, you guys travel. Your season start what?
It would be in season right now.
We'd be in season right now.
So, you know, golf is still very unique. We compete in the fall and the spring.
In
both seasons count toward your national ranking. So normally you'll start competing first or second week of September. You'll go until late October, early November. And then you'll start up again, usually competing mid-February. And then most of the conference championships will be like mid-April, with the NCAAs being early May. So, I mean, it's a long season.
Yeah, it is. So that's going back to the academics. So how many hours you traveling? How many hours you practicing? You really need to be committed to study, right?
Yeah. I mean, time management is of the utmost importance. Your days are pretty much laid out for you as an athlete. Like for us, you know, we would work out Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 7 to 8 a.m. Classes would start at 8:20. They would go to class until 1:45. Practice starts at 2:30 to 2:45. Depending on if we were playing or just practicing, you know, you'd be at the course from like 3 to 6 or 3 to 7. Go get dinner. And if you're signed up for study hall, you go do your hours. I mean, it, you know, and then you just get up and you do it all over. You study then.
And the goal over again. Yeah, so technically the student will go to bed probably around 10 at night, 11 at night every day, probably, right? Maybe more.
Probably later than that. I mean, probably like 1 midnight to 1 a.m. I mean, you always tell them, make sure you get your sleep. But, I mean, most student athletes are sleep deprived. There's no doubt.
That's part of it, right?
It is. You know, you hate to say it, but I know, you know, most of our student athletes, they're just very high achievers and, you know, they want to do everything well. I mean, there's always something that has to be sacrificed, and it was usually sleep, unfortunately.
It's sleep, right. Yeah, that's true. And now, Coach, I know the institution is a private institution. It's about, you know, probably 9,000 students right there at the institution.
Yeah, it's right around 10. It's around 8,500 undergrad.
Only grad. Okay.
2,000 grad schools. So yeah, it's usually hovers between 10 and 11,000. It's a really good size school. Beautiful campus. I mean, if you were on our campus, you would think that there were probably 20 to 25,000 students.
Wow.
That went. It's a big piece of property. It's very user friendly the way that it's laid out. It's easy to get around.
Well, I would love to go there one day. Too bad you're not there anymore, but to go just, you know, practice a little bit of golf and everything.
Yeah, well, come on out.
Now, Coach, what before we go, because I don't want to take too much time away from you, but before we go, what's the next step for you? You know, what do you have in mind? I know you were a coach for 32 years. You start, coaching. Your first head coach job was when you were 23. So what's now the motivation, Coach?
Yeah. Well, I want to stay in athletics, preferably stay in golf. And I do have a couple of opportunities that I'm looking at. One is really geared toward helping the student athlete and parents navigate recruiting.
Okay.
And then the other opportunity is actually supporting coaches.
Okay.
And helping coaches in university, like departments, better communicate and recruit better, and just keep up with the times and the changes, and just really recruit better. You know,
recruit better.
I think it's such a critical time, not only for the student athlete but for the coaches, especially with the transfer portal that's out there. Getting the right fit is important for everybody. As a coach, you're trying to build a team, and you're usually 2 years out recruiting. You're so far ahead of yourself. That was the thing that was always hard for me, was to just enjoy the moment. Because everything, you're always looking ahead.
You're thinking of what's,
definitely. I think that was, for me, probably the hardest part of coaching, was trying to just enjoy the day.
The moment.
Be
the
where
moment.
Your feet are, you know?
Definitely.
It was tough, but...
So you would start recruiting when the kids were, I would say, what, a sophomore? When you're... Sophomore is the best time when you start recruiting and take a look at them and see, hey, this is probably the best option for you.
Okay. Yeah, and I can't stress enough, because at that point, coaches aren't able to communicate with student athletes until their junior year. And so it makes it kind of tough. But, if a student athlete has their dream school or places that they really want to go, it's never too early to reach out and have that initial contact with a coach and just get yourself on their radar.
On the radar, right?
And then once that time is available, for the mutual communication, then kind of already, started the dialogue and just keep sending information and updating it. And, don't feel like you're being a bother.
Definitely.
If there's a goal out there that you want to achieve, so many of my players, their dream school was Notre Dame. And, by God, they did everything they needed to do to get here.
Well, I tell you a very interesting story when I was back in my country, and I was probably, my brother was playing professional right here, baseball. And he always, buy stuff for us and bring it back home, right? Like clothing and things like that. And the first sweatshirt that he ever bought for me coming from the United States was a Notre Dame game, a Notre Dame sweatshirt. Like, I had it. I remember clearly at Notre Dame. So I always follow that. Like I said, you know, we didn't know anything. We just got it. And I know it says Notre Dame and, you know, I have the logo and the Notre Dame on the bottom part. That was a hoodie. I love it. I loved it. But awesome. Coach, and why would you change a little bit on recruiting? What do you think? What could you do different, you know, now that you're looking at that path of recruiting and you know, presenting or helping, you know, student athletes and parents right there? What would you do different?
I don't know that I'll do anything different. I think it's just helping them navigate the process. And just making sure that they understand the process. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, the one thing I always told recruits, you know, obviously I wanted them to come to Notre Dame because it was the right fit.
Definitely.
But I would always tell them when, you know, they were heading out the door to go somewhere else for a visit, which I encouraged. I think it's important for these kids to take all their visits. But I would always tell them to just take a blank sheet of paper and across the top, write all the schools that you're visiting. Mm-hmm. And then down the left-hand side, write down everything that's important to you. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be impactful to your experience when you're at school.
Excellent.
And it doesn't matter what it is, but excellent. Just put it on paper. And as you take your visits, you know, you could have a yes or a no system or a check mark or a point system, whatever you want to do. But at the end of it, it's just going to be on paper. It's right in front of you. I think it takes the emotion out of the decision and you're going to know. You're going to know where you should go. And I did that when I was looking at schools, and you know, I think it's just really, really important to make sure that you take the time to get the right fit.
The right decision.
The right fit for you. And it's super important. Let the student athlete be in charge of their own recruiting. The parents need to stay in the background and let their child
do the job.
You know, just be responsible and accountable. And you know, it's so hard right now sometimes for these kids, you know, at this age to communicate, verbalize. And you know, before you go on a visit, you know, make sure you're comfortable doing that. And being able to have that dialogue is so important. And, you know, one thing that always aggravates me, I have a student that I was talking to and I'd ask him a question and then I get the answer from one of the parents.
Parents, yes.
I'm like.
And even the emails, because I know I got some coaches that told me in the past on the episodes before this one, they mentioned, I even know when they send an email to me and it's the parent. I know that. Yeah. I know it's not the kid talking to me. I know how they communicate. I know how they shorten their communication, everything, you know. So he's like, man, I just want them to take control, to do it themselves, right?
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, it's just at some point you got to let go. And yeah, they got a lot going on, but it helps them learn to manage.
Definitely.
What life's going to be like once they get to college. You know, they're going to have a lot of things to juggle, a lot of balls in the air at one time, and they got to figure it out.
Definitely. And,
you know, I love the parents, and the parent support is crucial. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be, you know, kind of hands off and just be supportive. You know what? And it's okay if your kid makes a mistake. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's part of it. It's part of growing up.
And, definitely.
I mean, you know, my own kids made mistakes when they were in school, and they both competed, played collegiate golf. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you have a problem with your coach, you go and talk to them. Don't have the parents call. Don't, you know, just handle the situation. Yeah.
Handle the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. Definitely,
you
know, definitely.
You got to let go at some point. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Coach, coach, it's been an hour and it's been like 5 minutes for me.
No, this was great. I appreciate you reaching out. I enjoyed it. And, you know, good luck to all the prospects that are out there, and hope they all find their right fit.
Find the right fit. And listen to what you just say right now. You know, take control of your recruiting process. You know, you can do it yourself. You know, I mean, I know there is many opinions, many different, you know, scenarios. Club coaches will tell you one thing. High school coaches will tell you another thing. The people at the high school will tell you, you know, I know. So just try to take a little bit of control, right, of yourself. Absolutely. And like you said, you know, you visit, you know, do the official visits, we do an official visits as well. All that kind of stuff that is necessary in order for the athletes to feel comfortable.
You know, you don't know what you don't know. You know, you might think, oh, I want to go to a big school, or, you know, oh, I want to go to a small school. You need to experience all of it.
Because
you just... But you'll know,
right? Yeah. You know, I came across with athletes where, you know, they went to Power Five universities, and they were extremely, and that was their dream school, but they have to do the transfer, you know, because they were not happy about it. They were just not, they didn't feel comfortable with the coach, with the coaches, with the school, with the, you know, so like you said, you have to make sure it's the right fit. Correct.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you need to be realistic. You know, if you're averaging 78 and you get online, you know, you got to do your homework,
mm-hmm.
you get online and see who's on the current roster, find out, you know, what their needs might be for mm-hmm. the team the year that you graduate, mm-hmm. look and see what the stroke average is. And, you know, it might be hard to take, and it you may find out, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to play there.
That's
well,
right.
Mm-hmm. There's a place for you, though. I mean, there's so many opportunities out there.
So many. And me personally, I love Division III as well. I think Division III is, you know, there's so many good schools right there. So many private schools right there. They will provide you so much financially, you know, when it comes to a scholarship, not athletic, because we know that it's not an athletic scholarship on Division III, but there's so much funds available in Division III. It's amazing.
My daughter played NAIA My son played like lower level D1, but they were where they needed to be.
Exactly.
And play and compete and had great experiences.
Excellent. Coach, my pleasure. You know,
enjoyed it.